Breakfast with Spanky, 7:30 to 9:30 on RDU 98.5 FM.
And I'd like to welcome onto the show right now, Leader of the Opposition, Mr. Phil Goff. Hello, Phil.
Good morning, Spanky.
Nice to have you with us this morning. Now, firstly, the ACT Party have demoted Heather Roy as deputy, and her portfolios of Consumer Affairs and the Associate Commerce Minister has been headed, given to John Boscawen, replacing her. Now, ACT aren't saying why they rolled her, and John Key doesn't think it's any of his business, but I would have thought we deserve some explanation as it's a ministerial-level change.
Well, absolutely. You know, ACT is the party that keeps talking about openness and transparency in government, but seems to act in the opposite way. Look, you've lost a Minister of the Crown. She's been sacked from a job. What was the cause of that? Was she incompetent in what she did? Did she make fundamental errors in her role as Minister of the Crown that the public should know about? Was it just because she and Rodney were competitors for the job of leader? What was the reason? And this, you know, your party affairs can't be internal in that sense. You're talking about ministerial office, and the public deserves an explanation.
Are the lines a little bit grey under MMP, now that parties have started to cobble together governments, where traditionally, you know, party's business was party's business, but now you've got these weird mixed portfolios going on?
Yeah, look, I still think, regardless of the electoral system, John Key's got a cabinet and ministers outside of cabinet. The public deserve the right to know why a person has had her ministerial portfolio stripped from her. Mind you, we never found out about Richard Wirth and why he decided to sack Richard Wirth, although, you know, you could read between the lines on that one. But I think, you know, if it's public office and you're talking about open government, surely the Prime Minister and the leader of the ACT Party have the obligation to come clean and say, this is why we did it. She wasn't up to the job, or she failed to carry out her responsibilities, or I didn't like the colour of her hair, whatever. But the public is none the wiser at the moment. They don't know whether there was a good reason for sacking her, or no reason at all, or simply, you know, entrenched factionalism within the ACT Party, which makes you wonder about the stability now of the coalition. Will Roger Douglas and Heather Roy go off and do their own thing, which actually takes away the government's clear majority in the House if it doesn't have Maori Party support? Maybe this is something that will really strengthen the Maori Party.
It's a sounds like the nature of the ACT Party is their ideology means they're all a bunch of strange individuals that came together, and they're so individualistic they struggle to get any consensus on anything, don't they?
Well, they are an odd mixture, I've got to say. I was going to answer that by saying you may well comment that, Spanky. Yeah, you may well say that. I couldn't possibly comment, but look, you've got five MPs in the ACT Party. They got, 2.7% in the poll at the last election. They're now polling much less than that. You've got to wonder what their mandate to actually even be in the government is. And you know, it is the far-right party. It drags National Party to the right. It all looks pretty untidy, pretty messy.
Now, we talked to Peter Dunn just earlier in the show about his idea of income splitting with couples who have kids. And on one side, it seems like delivering a tax incentive to people who are already pretty well off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that in tough times, it's an interesting place for us to be putting money. He did make the point that it's only a fraction of what Working for Families costs. But he said that he was drafting this piece of legislation working alongside Labor when Labor was in government. And then all of a sudden, you guys, after only looking at it for a few minutes, have said you're not interested in it at all. Is that because of the nature of the bill, or is that because this is a political game?
No, we rejected income splitting when we were in government. Peter Dunn has raised this before. It's been a bit of a hobby horse of his. The government's been really generous to me. I've had two huge tax cuts. Income splitting would give me another $8,000, $9,000 a year. Somebody on my income is not the priority. If we're going to spend $500 million more, which means you'd probably have to borrow it, because where's the money coming from, why would you spend it in a way that already helped people that had got tax cut after tax cut under this government? Well, most people on low and middle incomes will be struggling to keep their nose above rising prices by the end of this year. It can't be a priority for $500 million in expenditure, and it can't be right to reward the wealthy once again at the expense of middle and lower income earners.
There's a tension, though, isn't there, around how you bridge inequality, while at the same time, how do you start to strengthen homes so that kids are brought up in the best possible environment?
Absolutely, which is why you brought in Working for Families and why the big investment in Working for Families was so important. We wanted to make sure that we could lift, I think we lifted 130,000 kids out of poverty by providing the Working for Families support. That's a good investment of New Zealand money. Those kids are going to do better. They're going to contribute more. Everybody's going to benefit. But if you give the money disproportionately to the wealthy, look, you know, in the last tax cuts, $5 billion went to the top 5% of income earners, and now they want to give disproportionately more to that same group. How about looking after the middle and lower income people for a change, not just looking after the really well off?
Lastly, alcohol reform seems to have come to a sort of a head. It always gets pretty fudgy, though. There's all these options. Well, there's the option now. We can either maintain the purchase age at 18, raise it to 20, or have a split where 18-year-olds on licensed premises can buy it, but you have to be 20 to buy it from retail. How will you be voting along those three lines?
I'll be voting to raise the purchase age from an off-licence to 20 and maintain the purchase age at 18 for the on-licence.
So why are you voting like that?
Because I think, you know, it's perfectly proper that if you've got 18 and 19-year-olds going into a restaurant and wanting to have a drink with their meal, it's under supervision. If they're going into licensed premises, again, there's rules that apply to the supply regarding the supply of alcohol, so, you know, people aren't intoxicated when you're supplying them. The alternative is you do what generations of kids did before that, you know, get somebody to get you the booze, put it in the back of the car, take it down to the beach or the reserve, drink without any supervision. I don't think that's preferable to people being on licensed premises and having proper supervision.
I find it hard to believe, though, that tinkering like that is going to get anywhere near solving anything.
Oh, no, you're right, on that, Spanky.
I don't even know if would it make any difference, even that?
It may make a difference, but it's not a silver bullet. And it's wrong to say the whole problem with drinking is simply young people. It's not. Although if you go into the accident and emergency wards of a hospital on a Friday and Saturday night, you'll find that overwhelmingly the people that are in there suffering from injuries or intoxication are people that are at the younger age of the spectrum. I think you've got to do a whole lot more than that, including changing the culture of drinking in this country, if you're to get on top of a problem that's costing us billions of dollars a year.
I see the RSA even has trouble.
Well, that's a real concern as well. And I think we've got to be really strict with licensed premises. Corner shops that'll sell alcohol to anyone, and they do the sting operations. They find these people aren't even asking for age of identification. I think you're absolutely ruthless on those people. You say the second time you do that, you've lost your license, you're out of it for good.
Yeah.
You've got to make sure that people meet their obligations. And there are too many people out there that just want to get the dollar for the grog and don't give a damn about the implications. Well, I'm sorry, you know, the personal, the social and the economic costs of alcohol abuse are huge in our society. We've got to do something about it.
Now, Phil, just before we let you go, when we're talking to Peter Dunn, today's theme of the show has been what's the strangest animal you've ever been attacked by? And Peter Dunn shared with us that he was attacked by magpies once while walking to Canterbury University. I don't know if that still happens around government or not. Have you ever been attacked by anything interesting?
On the odd occasion, a dog on the doorstep when I was knocking on doors in my electorate. And the worst ones are not the big ones that you might imagine. I mean, if they take to you, they'd be worse. But it's the one that you show disdain for, you know, the little one that's only so many centimetres off the ground,
that's
and you walk
right.
by it disdainfully and whack on the back of your ankle.
Yeah, little dog syndrome. Yeah, yeah, and they all vote for National, those little dogs.
Oh, the nature of them leads me to believe that. Yeah, mean, miserable and aggressive.
Phil, nice talk. You catch you later.
Okay,
on.
Thank you.
See you. Bye-bye.
Catch up with you again. Bye.
That's Phil Goff, leader of the opposition there.
This has been a Breakfast with Spanky podcast, thanks to RDU 98.5 FM. To find out more, go to rdu.org.nz.